Hello, everyone. Welcome to Talking Logistics, where we have conversations with thought leaders and newsmakers in the supply chain logistics industry. It's my great pleasure to welcome today's program, Chris Jones, who's Executive Vice President, Industry at Descartes. And today we're going to talk about labor shortages. What are supply chain logistics companies doing to survive the challenge? So this will be the third Talking Logistics episode that we've done focused on the labor shortage problem. So we aired the first episode back in January of 2022, when Chris had come on the program to talk about a topic about this topic in an episode that we had titled "The Labor Shortage Problem: Why It's Bigger Than You Think," and then he was back on the program a couple of months ago to share insights and advice from a research report that Descartes had published at the time, titled "How Bad Is the Supply Chain Logistics Workforce Challenge?" And now it's great to have Chris back on the program to share again additional insights and advice from a follow-up research report that was just published by Descartes, titled "What Are Companies Doing to Survive the Supply Chain Logistics Workforce Challenge?" So that is certainly a question that many supply chain logistics executives are wrestling with, and so it's great to have Chris in the program to help us explore that question further. So Chris, welcome.
Great to be here, Adrian, and to talk with you.
So, Chris, I mean, this topic, if you're paying attention and if it's in the back of your mind, you'll see it pop up in multiple different places. I mean, just I think it was just last week, or maybe it was even, it was just last week in the Wall Street Journal. There was an article about the latest fertility numbers here in the United States, how they went down yet again, in the past year. So continuing that 50-year plus trend of, the U.S. being below the replacement rate. So basically, our population is shrinking. That's the bottom line there. So and that goes back to that very first episode that we talked about, why this problem is bigger than we think, because it is not something that's just a fallout from the COVID pandemic, but it is something that is truly ingrained in just a lot of different trends that are happening. So I guess to get started, I mean, given that the workforce challenge, is pervasive, it's clear that, at least one of the things that companies must do is make sure that the workers that they do have are as productive, as possible. So what are supply chain logistics organizations doing to improve the productivity of their existing workforce?
Well, that was definitely one of the questions we really wanted to get answered, and the top response was automating non-value-added services and repetitive tasks. And if you think about it, it's all about worker productivity, right? So looking at this from a and if you think about how technology's evolved, and I don't want to spend any time on this one on the AI and so forth, but all these things are coming together that really can help get more out of the folks you have. The other interesting part of it was that was a focus also on commingling operations and centralization. These are again economy of scale plays and product and definitely productivity plays where we're seeing things like centralized transportation planning and really just a number of areas where they're being treated as services, right, for the overall corporation as opposed to one division after another doing their own thing.
That first point about automating tasks, I mean, it always makes me think, going back to kind of just the lean principles and thinking about waste in processes. And I think if you take a step back and you look at wasted time, there's certainly a lot of wasted time out there in terms of people doing things that are they spend maybe 80% of their time doing things that could easily be automated, let's say, or maybe not easily, but certainly should be automated. And then really only 20% of the time that's really going to be value-added productive work that's going to truly drive continuous improvement, going to drive help drive revenues, profits, so on and so forth. So I think it makes a lot of sense to really focus on those areas that, if you look at it from a wasted time perspective, is where are our people wasting time doing things that are just truly not value add, that if you really take a step back and look at the technology landscape, for example, are things that can certainly be automated. Now, I know in this report you follow the same methodology that you've done in your previous reports, where you also look at the results. You slice and dice the results based on different factors, and one of the things you look at is differences between organizations with industry-leading financial results or financial performance versus those that have below average financial performance. Any differences between kind of those two groups?
Yeah, I would say the big part is what I would call the intensity of it. The better performers, I'll just say it, they don't really monkey around. And some areas, classic things, example would be like centralization and shared services types approaches. A lot of companies will be like, well, I don't want to upset people and things are going okay in the organization. And the better performers are like, no, we can be doing this a much better job. Like, what's really happening originally when you could say when a lot of this started, it was about taking people out per se. And in some respects, it still is, but it's not necessarily about people going away. It's about how do I free up the people I have to do more of what I want to do? Because the reality is they're just not going to find them out on the street and definitely not find the quality. So it is absolutely about that taking that step and getting past the classic objections that I'll describe it as it's the old saying, right? Water follows the path of least resistance. And unfortunately, management works that way pretty well too. But facing a different reality, that's what you see more of, and that's where those organizations just get at it.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. I mean, I think that there's always this inertia or this resistance to, rock the boat or change things. But I think history has proven that companies that are continuously asking, is this still the best way to be doing things, are the ones that continue to innovate. And that goes with, where you're applying your resources and making sure that you're applying your resources, your talent in the most productive and beneficial manner as possible. Because I think, companies that recognize and are continuously looking and doing that analysis, to your point, are going to be the ones that are continue to push the envelope and continue to, outperform their competition. So let's talk a little bit about technology now, obviously. What kind of technologies are companies deploying to help achieve productivity gains for both labor, workers, those on the front lines, as well as for knowledge workers?
Well, if I just go back to the study that we published about 2 months ago, it's all based on the same data that what we're looking at here. And if you will, the area that from a labor point of view where people were the most challenged was drivers. So it's not surprising that route optimization ended up at the top of the list in this case because getting the most out of your drivers is a really big deal. There's a litany of things for why it's the right thing to do, but in this case, again, it gets down to, and this is something we hear all the time, is it's hard to get drivers and it's really hard to get high quality drivers. So if your business is, and this is where a lot of businesses still are, they're in maybe not the exponential growth mode that they were a couple of years ago, but they're still growing. And finding a way to get another stop or two on a route, every day is, makes a huge difference. It doesn't have you out on the street, chasing folks.
Yeah, I know. We did an Indago survey. I think it was last year, maybe it was the year before, where we focused on driver satisfaction, and the factors that impact driver satisfaction. And I think that's kind of, we always focus on customer satisfaction, right? And how, that historically has been the center of the supply chain, right? How do we continue to align processes and so forth to make sure we maximize customer satisfaction? But we kind of took a different approach here to kind of look at driver satisfaction, because ultimately, they're an important link to, particularly if you're talking about on-time performance and things like that, they're a key contributor in driving customer satisfaction. And I think a lot of the things you talked about, so it's not surprising that, drivers and technologies related to, making their jobs easier, more productive, more satisfying, makes sense, because we always hear about the challenges that companies have in terms of not only finding new drivers, but and certainly in retaining them as well. So we've talked about productivity and helping to improve the productivity of existing employees. So now, what are organizations doing to help attract new employees and also on the flip side, kind of retain their existing ones?
Yeah, well, this is a pretty interesting one. I think this will be a little counterintuitive for folks in some respects, depending I'll call it based on maybe what they might have been seeing in the market. The top answer for attracting people was work time flexibility. I would say don't read that as less hours, read that as hours when it's more beneficial to me. Or my family, right? That kind of stuff, right? So dealing with those kinds of things. But right along with that was adopting the latest technology. And especially as we talk about, younger potential employees, they're not really interested in sitting there in front of your green screen, right? And so this is a I think something that people need to pay attention to. I know I said this on the last episode we did, but I would say it here. It's not about fashion. It's really, if you think about that, and we're going to get to it in a second on retraining or retaining, excuse me, it's about them improving them and their ability to I'll call it learn and get it further education and also productivity, right? So that message needs to be pretty clear to people. If you bring them in and I'll just say it, and you are vintage, early 2000s as an example with the stuff that you're running, I mean, that's going to be a red flag for younger folks. So on the retaining front, that's interesting too. Again, I'll just go backwards. The second answer was on, was pay. All right. And I know it's a big challenge of getting people in the door, but equally keeping them right once you've got them, it's that's huge, huge issue. I think it's even more significant because you think about the time and investment and knowledge of your business and your customers or whatever else, right? Those are big deals. I'll just say it, continually looking at your workforce and making sure you're competitive because loyalty is just not where it was before for a whole lot of reasons. And it's not like I'll just describe it as it's not necessarily because employees don't want to stay. They have options, way more options out there than they ever had. The first answer is on the job training and education compensation. So this goes back to that whole point about things like modern technology is that and again, if you focus on younger workers, but not just want younger workers, it's all workers. They want if there really were something, they want to learn and grow, and they want the opportunity to improve themselves, right? So, again, finding ways to enrich what they're doing, sense of participation, as an example, and those a lot of those things come through, education.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. I mean, I think past research that we've done kind of correlates with that, where, a lot of employees, really want to have visibility to their career path, right? So they want to be able to see, okay, I'm at this entry level position right now, or I'm at this stage in my career right now. What do I need to do to get to the next stage, right? And what kind of training are you going to provide me? What kind of technology? What kind of new skills are you going to provide me? So I think the companies that do it right are the ones that really provide early on that visibility to that career path and how they're going to help them, that employee, move along, that career path. So they get excited and motivated, to go, to go there. And the flexibility of hours, I mean, I have a daughter who's in her early 20s, she's been in the workforce now just for a couple of years. And that's a critically important for her because she, for a variety of different reasons, she needs that flexibility. And, sometimes she has to leave work at, 2 or 3 in the afternoon. And, but she's working from home at night from, 9 to midnight, which works for her, and,
Right.
and for her, that's very important. And, I think for her employer, that's part of their culture to enable that. So I think it's a nice, it's a nice fit there. And we're going to make the link available when we do the write-up, of this episode for people to be able to download the report and read the full findings. But anything else, from the research, any other findings stand out for you?
Yeah, there's two really, and this is around finding leveraging alternate sources, so not traditional work sources for people, to fill the gaps, right? So The top answer for new workers was immigrants, and then followed by people with disabilities. And what's really interesting about that, and if I just said the global study, that was at the top of that range. When you look at, and we did this also across Europe and North America, Canada and Germany, which have had really solid programs for bringing immigrants in to fill the workforce for decades now, they were 20 points higher in the use of immigrants than anybody else, right? So it really kind of stood out. And as you said, Adrian, up front, with the birth rate replacement rate being, below what it's needed to basically keep even just to break even in terms of a number of people entering the workforce, we need immigrants, right? And and so I think people who really get that are really at an advantage. The other part of it was leveraging veterans, and unfortunately, what I'm going to tell you is that that did not go as well as I think most of us would hope. And what I mean by that was for both labor and for knowledge worker positions, the top answers, I'll put it to you this way. The answers for like labor as a choice was usually the fourth option and maybe one third of the top answer, right? So that to me is mind-boggling. It's a great source. You have people who are trained in organization and discipline and a lot of logistics skills, especially because military is about logistics. And so, I think that's to me a one that's missed. I do business with a number of companies who do focus on it and make it a big part of their recruiting. And these people are highly valuable, and it seems like we're kind of missing the mark there on a global basis.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think it is such a rich pool of talented folks across the board. Everything from drivers to leaders, because I mean there is such a leadership component in the in for, among veterans and those that participate in the armed forces. And then your point about immigration, I mean, I think that's spot on. I think unfortunately, as we all know, it is such a hot potato topic, politically, not only here in the United States, but in other countries as well. And I think it's something that, if we are going to solve this problem or address this problem effectively, we're going to need the type of leadership in government that, is able to, put together, some smart policies around this and get past the, all the rhetoric out there, all the noise out there, that pits one side against the other, because it is part of the, it needs to be part of the solution, because there is no other, of course it's the technology piece and everything that we've talked about, but that's only part of it. We need this component there as well. Well, Chris, I mean, maybe as a way to, summarize, what will define the winners in the talent war moving forward?
Thinking about becoming the employer of choice, just like we talk about, and you and I've talked about this before about a shipper of choice for carriers, it's the same thing here. You really want to focus on your culture. Again, if you look at higher performing organizations, it's a couple things. It's having, the best people, but really the best environment, and really fostering that. And it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy, right? Because what happens is people, if they feel like they're empowered, they overachieve, right? Their work is exciting, right? They feel like they're, adding value. And I said this on the last one too, which is quite simply, the world has flipped. It used to be I'll call it a employer's world, right? Where they could, really there were more people than there were jobs, and you could hire and fire, and you really didn't see much of a difference. And now it's an employee's world, right? Given what's happened and the shortage and the fact that, especially if we just talk about the US, the economy's still, it's booming. And you, every month you look at the jobs report and it's just continues to defy what every economist is saying about it, right? So if that's the case, then you got to be the person who people w want to come work for and want to stay there, because in the end they're going to be the almost.
Yeah, that's a great point. I think yes, you're right. I mean, I think companies that recognize that the leverage has shifted, if you will, and that they're in truly in the midst of a talent war, and it's going to be coming. It's going to get more acute in the years ahead, and putting the steps that we've talked about today, in place. So I think that's going to require some collaboration, obviously, between the different functional groups, in this case, particular supply chain logistics, and the HR department, right? And really understanding, how can the company position themselves as the employer of choice for future supply chain and logistics professionals. So, Chris, I know this is the third episode. I'm sure it won't be the last one because this is such a evolving and important topic. So, but for now, thank you very much for making the time to be with us today.
Well, thanks for having me, Adrian.
And I want to thank those of you that joined us on this episode. If you're watching this episode on demand, either at the Talk Logistics website or on the Descartes website, and you've got a question or a comment for Chris, you can post it there, and I'm sure he'll be more than happy to respond via that medium. Again, thank you for joining us, and look forward to seeing you in a future episode of Talk Logistics. Have a great day.